I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. In case it wasn't already on your radar, I wanted to let you know that we're teaming up with the University of Wyoming Art Museum to put on a storytelling workshop. It's going to be October 27th here in Laramie, Wyoming. We all have stories to tell, but it's sometimes hard to make them interesting to people who don't share our interests and passions. That's where this workshop comes in. We're going to focus on helping you tell your own stories about the outdoors in a way that's fun and engaging. I have loads of tips and tricks to share with you, and the museum's education curator, Katie Christensen, will be facilitating some hands-on activities where we'll use artwork from the museum to fuel your creativity. By the end of the day, you'll have the tools you need to captivate your audience, whoever they may be. Lunch will be provided, and H&S Coffee has generously offered to keep us caffeinated. In case you're not familiar with them, H&S is a fabulous local coffee roaster here in Laramie, and, well, I won't get into how much of their coffee I drink every day, because then you would all know how much of a coffee addict I am. But seriously, their coffee is really good. Anyway, if you want to get in on the fun, head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, to register for the workshop. We are capping registration at 15 people, so don't wait too long to sign up. All right, now that I've told you about all that, let's get on to our story for the day. It's been just over a year since Hurricane Harvey hit the Texas Gulf Coast. It was a Category 4 storm, and it dumped 51 inches of water in Houston and nearly burst major dams. Hundreds of thousands of homes were flooded, and coastal communities were devastated. You heard about all that on the news, but what you don't always hear is the more personal side of things, the surprising emotions that a storm like this can stir up, even if you're really lucky. On this episode, Houston-based reporter Laura Eisensee reflects on how her personal and professional lives collided during Harvey, and about how powerless she felt to do anything useful. It's a story that gives us an inside look at what it's like to experience and report on a natural disaster like this, and about what happens when you feel like you're incapable of helping the situation. I'll let Laura take it from here.
The first time Harvey came up in our morning news meeting at the Houston Public Radio Station, I remember our editor emphasizing what the forecasters were saying. It would be just a tropical storm. Expect a lot of rain, but it wasn't time to board up the windows, evacuate, or anything extreme. Still, our newsroom wanted to be prepared, so we made an initial coverage plan, and I wanted to be prepared at home. I stopped by the grocery store on my way home and grabbed peanut butter, crackers, water, and Gatorade. It's a ritual familiar to anyone who lives in a hurricane zone. That was a Wednesday. The next morning, when I woke up, the forecast had dramatically changed. The storm had intensified. It would make landfall in less than 48 hours as a major hurricane. And soon I was filing a report for our national network about Texans scrambling to get ready for Harvey. I'm a reporter at Houston Public Media. I usually cover education, how kids are learning, school board meetings, stuff like that. 200,000 students and their teachers were supposed to start the first day of school the following Monday. I was keeping an eye on that date to see if it would be delayed. But while I was trying to stay focused in the newsroom, I could feel a low level of anxiety churning in my stomach. I felt this storm was going to be different, worse than usual. Adding to my anxiety was my family. Because I'm not just a journalist in Houston. I grew up here. My parents, most of my siblings, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins live here. And I kept wondering in the back of my mind, were they ready for Harvey? I tried to turn off some of those thoughts when I left the newsroom to talk to residents in a neighborhood prone to flooding. I talked to a couple trying to nail a plastic tarp to their front door. Their house was across the street from a major bayou. I drove away thinking how futile the sheet of plastic seemed if the water rushed over the bayou's banks. Some of those somber thoughts faded later that afternoon when, just hours before Harvey would make landfall further down the coast, my mom sent me a text. She wrote that they were ready for Harvey, and she snapped a picture of our family's 60-year-old Boston Whaler. The snapshot from my mom showed the old but still seaworthy boat parked in its trailer on the side of my parents' house in Southwest Houston. I thought my mom's snarky sense of humor was hilarious. I showed the photo to a couple of coworkers in the newsroom. We laughed. A boat next to our house, ready for the storm. Turns out the city was not ready for Harvey. But you already know that. What was totally unexpected was how the storm would affect me on a personal level, even though I was one of the lucky ones. The hurricane made landfall around 10 p.m. Friday night, far from Houston. It seemed quiet. Then Saturday, the rain came, and it seemed like it would never stop. By early Sunday morning, all the rain had washed away any joke about the boat. I had not been assigned to the team that would ride out the storm and provide breaking news coverage at the station, so I woke up at home. I immediately looked out my bedroom window and saw the street was flooded. I wasn't surprised by that. It floods even in a heavy rain. But I was surprised how far over the curb it was, more than halfway up the yard to our front door. And I don't even live super close to a bayou, like my parents. It made me worry about how high the bayou was near their house, how high the water was on their street. Their neighborhood floods often, and they live in a single-story ranch home. If water comes inside, there's no higher ground to find refuge. I wanted to get out of my house and do something useful. Either head over to my parents' side of town and check on them, or do some field reporting. And I couldn't do either. I couldn't get out of my neighborhood. My Mazda hatchback would never make it through the knee-high water. I felt stuck and powerless and anxious. I felt like I wasn't in control of anything. But I had to do something. So when our state editor texted me to file some reports from home, I eagerly started filing one after another for our radio station and national network. It made me feel useful, and what was happening was incredible if I stopped to think. City officials were advising residents flooded out of their homes to go onto their roofs and wait for help. The county's chief manager asked any resident with a boat to help rescue other people, because official emergency responders didn't have enough boats. People started to worry how high the death toll would rise. A police officer drowned on his way to work. Six family members died when their van got swept away in the floodwaters. For me, the deaths reminded me of when I reported in New Orleans after Katrina in one of my first reporting jobs. Back then, I worked with an experienced photojournalist. We went out on boats with firefighters who went from house to house, knocked on doors, and spray-painted signs that said there were no victims inside. I had seen just how deadly a hurricane could be. But that felt like a different time, a different place. This was now. This felt too close, too personal. Because Harvey was here, flooding my hometown. And it brought a whole new level of fear. What if something happened to one of my friends, my family? These weren't random strangers like in New Orleans. On a deeper level, I wondered how we, as a city, were going to survive this. I didn't know the answers, which made me feel all the more helpless. But I kept filing dispatches. I stood on my front door stoop and recorded on the phone, capturing the steady drumbeat of the rain. Other journalists thought the live rain sound was thrilling. I just wanted to feel useful. In between stories, I kept texting my mom and siblings. Can you use the boat if needed? Does the boat have life jackets? How high is the water? At mine, it was halfway up the yard. My mom reported the same. A few hours later, how high is the water now? At mine, it was going down. At my parents', it was still rising. I monitored Facebook and kept seeing pictures of friends getting flooded out. One guy from high school floated his toddler daughter out of their house on an inflatable mattress. The water was up to his chest. Another friend waded through water to rescue pets after his family had to evacuate. My mom told me on the phone she and my dad had stacked furniture up in the back of their house, furthest away from the street in case water entered. They had suitcases packed if they had to evacuate, but they weren't leaving yet. I worried about that decision. What if they waited too long? Taking a break and sitting at my computer, I remember feeling utterly overwhelmed, helpless, alone. I think we all have an urge to rush to our loved ones when they're in danger. We want to protect them, help them, do something to fix their problems. And that urge was especially strong for me just then, but I was totally at a loss. I couldn't drive through the flooded streets to get my family. I couldn't even convince them to leave their one-story house and find higher ground. I couldn't help my friends evacuate from their homes. And I couldn't stop the rain. No one could. I felt paralyzed by my inability to do anything useful. It's like when your best friend gets diagnosed with brain cancer and there's nothing you can do but hug them and say you're there for them. Or when a loved one dies and all you can do is cry and miss them. What do you do in a situation like that? How do you help when you feel completely helpless, when there's nothing you can do to make things better?
Hey, it's Willow. We'll get back to the story in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from The Great Courses, letting you learn for the pure pleasure of learning. The Great Courses are college-level classes taught by experts who are passionate about passing on their knowledge. You don't have to be enrolled in an academic institution to enjoy them. You just stream the courses online or purchase them in digital format. There's no homework, no exams, just learning for the fun of it. For a limited time only, they have a special deal for Out There listeners. You can purchase their Fundamentals of Photography course for just $9.99, which is over $200 in savings. The course is taught by a National Geographic photographer, and it'll show you how to take gorgeous photos regardless of your camera. Again, that's available to Out There listeners for just $9.99. Another option is to sign up for a free trial of the Great Courses Plus, which lets you stream any of their courses. It's kind of like signing up for Spotify as opposed to just purchasing an individual song. Anyway, both these options are available for a limited time only. To take advantage of them, go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/outthere. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/outthere. And we've got a link to that on our website as well. And now, back to the story.
I think it was Sunday night that I lost it with my parents. I urged them to go across the street to our neighbor's house to spend the night, just in case the water didn't let up. I felt the neighbors would be safer because it's a two-story house, not a single story like my parents. By then, the water was about a foot from their house. Again, my father said they had their bags packed, but they would wait to leave unless it was necessary. I screamed at him that we didn't know if the reservoirs would hold. I cried. He calmly said they would wait. Images of my parents getting swept away in floodwaters rushed through my brain. my stomach felt empty and hollow. It was Monday afternoon, 2 days after the rain started, a day after constant dispatches for National, when I decided I had to go out and do something. Homes out west of the city were getting inundated, but the street flooding in my neighborhood had subsided. My sister called and said she was taking donations to the downtown convention center, which had turned into a massive shelter for thousands of people. And I thought, well, if she goes, I'll go with her. I felt safe traveling together, and I felt we were each doing something. She was taking needed supplies, and I interviewed members of the Red Cross and people who had been displaced from their homes. They arrived by the busloads, some with a few belongings in plastic garbage bags to keep them dry. It made me feel connected to my family by just seeing and hugging my sister, and it made me feel connected to my city when we were all going through this trauma and loss together. I was still scared of driving in case it started raining heavily again. But when I got home, I filed a story about what I learned from the shelter, and I felt calmer, like I had found my compass again. I didn't have all the answers, but I knew what direction to go, and that was to keep on reporting. The next day, I finally went back to the newsroom. When I got there, I had a new assignment: fill in for our executive producer who is trapped in her suburban home by surrounding floodwaters. I monitored press conferences for news. I pulled in feeds from other reporters who were filing stories where they could. I gave assignments to reporters parachuting in from other stations to help us. It was a bit overwhelming to try and keep up with all the news still happening, but every story I helped produce or edit gave me a surge of adrenaline. I didn't have time to stop and think and feel about my own thoughts or fears or insecurity. There was too much news to cover and get into our extended hourly newscasts. Just being around other people made me feel less alone. By the end of the day Tuesday, I was exhausted, but I didn't feel empty inside. I wanted to do more. The rest of that week, we worked 10-hour days to stay on top of the news. And in the immediate aftermath, I started to report more from the field. All that didn't mean I stopped worrying about my family. The flooding in my parents' neighborhood receded, but things got worse for other relatives. I almost broke down when one of my aunts called me and asked what roads they could take to evacuate. I gave her directions, told her I loved her, and when we hung up, I cried for a minute by myself. Then I dried my eyes and went back to work. It's been a year since Harvey. I still get scared when we have a heavy rain. I don't like to drive in it. I check the drains in our backyard often. And on the 4th of July, when another heavy rain flooded my street and pushed water over the curb, my heart raced and I wanted to cry. I should be used to it by now, but images of evacuees at the convention center flashed through my mind. There's another feeling I get sometimes too, that survivor's guilt. Another journalist I know lost his car. Close friends had to rebuild their homes from floodwaters. So many people I've interviewed for stories lost everything when they had so little to start with. I started the storm with plenty of privilege: a car, some emergency savings, a support network in and outside of Houston. I didn't lose any of that. But there's something else I took away from Harvey, something a little more hopeful. I felt so powerless during the storm because I couldn't control anything. I wanted to change the situation, or at least help, and I felt I couldn't. I didn't have a boat to rescue others or even my parents. All I could do was file stories. At the time, I thought diving into my work was just a way to distract myself. But looking back, I realized it wasn't such a bad instinct. Our local news was a lifeline for people in harm's way. We told people when a chemical plant was exploding. We updated people on the safety of the dams protecting our city. And since the storm, we've helped people navigate the long road to recovery. When you can't change the situation, sometimes you just have to keep doing the only thing you can do, even when it seems hopelessly insufficient. Because those little actions, a donation of dry clothes, helping a neighbor tear out soggy carpet, even just reporting what's going on, they all matter. They show us it's not hopeless. We may be traumatized, but we're not helpless. We can still do something.
That was Laura Eisensee. She's a reporter at Houston Public Media. If you like this story, check out the other piece she did for Out There. It's called Love is Not a Finish Line, and it aired back in 2016. Before you go, I wanted to give a huge thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. Patreon is a crowdfunding platform for creative endeavors. It lets you make donations to projects you love on a monthly basis. This month, we hit a major milestone. We reached our goal of bringing in $450 a month through Patreon, which means we're going to start producing the show a little more frequently. So far, we've been releasing Out There episodes twice a month. But of course, some months are longer than others, which means there's often a 3-week gap between episodes. Starting in November, we're going to be airing the show every 2 weeks, and it's happening thanks to your support. Thank you all so much. You guys are amazing. If you haven't had a chance to make a contribution to the show, it's super easy to do so. Just head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. One other quick reminder, our storytelling workshop is October 27th at the University of Wyoming Art Museum. I am really looking forward to sharing some of my storytelling secrets with you. And Katie Christensen, who I'm partnering with at the museum, is absolutely delightful. I know you're going to love some of the activities she's dreaming up for the workshop as well. To sign up, just go to our website. Again, that's outtherepodcast.com. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day. Be bold. Go outside and find your dreams.